Welcome to the Leaders Playlist. Today we're talking to Gatik Shoya. He is the co-founder of Transform Me. He's a leadership facilitator, a coach, and a very passionate storyteller. Today's leadership skill that we're discussing is networking. We hope you enjoy.
Gatik, can you please tell us the story of yourself?
So my journey, Renee and Dave, has really been that of extremely shy, underconfident boy who was ridden with this low self-esteem, always comparing myself with others and always absolutely petrified of speaking up and reaching out all through my teenage years, up until my first job, perhaps, to being invited to the TEDx stage twice, to co-founding a global leadership development company, and most interestingly, becoming a storytelling coach for over 120 organizations globally. That's kind of been my journey. It's quite fascinating when I look back at it, because this is not what I had envisioned. So a lot of things happen by design, a lot of things happen by default. But yeah, that's a little bit about my journey. And I think given where I came from in terms of struggling to reach out and connect with people, struggling to speak up and to do what I do today, and I think one of the most important things of this journey has really been at some point of time, and I think this was in my first job or my second job, at some point of time, I realized that there are some people who are born with it and there's some people who are not. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know about you, Renee, and you, Dave. I don't know whether either of you felt that you were born with it, the gift of the gab and the ability to just strike up a conversation with a stranger.
I'm Irish. I've kicked the blarney stone. So, you know, get me in a pub and, you know, I'll waffle the ears off you. So, yeah, definitely born with it. I think all Irish people are born with it.
Wow.
I'm an Irish person who cannot talk.
Every day, no. And I don't think I've gotten much better than that over the years either.
Yeah, it's funny you said that alcohol bit, because that's one of the jokes I crack in my workshop. I look at people and I say, all right, how many of you like drinking alcohol? And they raise their hands. And I say, how many of you enjoy telling stories after that? They raise their hand. And I say, what happens when there's no alcohol? How many of you enjoy telling stories? And there are very few hands that go up then. It's all right. You're so right. But the kind of stories that come up after alcohol are not the kind of stories that we're going to be talking about. But so I think that realization that there's some people who are born with it and some people who are not. And I realized fairly early on that I am one of those people who's not born with it. But I really wanted to do something around that, because my early life has been heavily influenced by my father and how I saw him as somebody who would just reach out to anybody and strike up a conversation. And I always looked up to him. So I wanted to do that. And when I first became a trainer about 20 years back, I somewhere decided that, okay, if I'm not born with it, let me kind of deep dive into the science behind it and understand, you know, what is it that helps you reach out? How's it that you can connect? How's it that you can tell stories and form deeper connections with people? And that's really what I've done. And 10 years back, the outcome of doing all of this 10 years back was me launching this course called The Art of Storytelling, which is really about, reaching out and connecting with people, using storytelling as a medium. I love what I do now. I can't imagine doing anything else. And the more people I coach and train, whether they are born with it or whether they've had a journey similar to mine, being shy and unsure of reaching out, having trained and coached thousands of people, I now know and I'm convinced that the process, the science, always works.
Thanks. So what does networking mean to you? That's the kind of topic of today's conversation. Networking. What comes to mind? What's foremost?
You know, interesting you say that, Dave, because let me step back and ask you another question that'll lead to this. When I say the word story to you, what comes to your mind when I say story?
Okay, I'll go. For me, it's some way of being able to tell something about yourself, to communicate something. And being Irish, we have a saying, right? Never let the truth get in the way of a good story. But I think when you're a leader, you have to be a bit more authentic, right? You can't just make up stuff. You've got to tell a story that reflects, one, something of yourself, and also the true reality, right? Rather than create a false narrative.
Yeah. And that's great, Dave. That's more from a business context. And maybe, Renee, if I can check in with you, when I just say the word story, what's the first thing that pops up in your head? Just story. Forget business, forget professional, forget leaders, just story.
I think, well, the first thought that popped into my head was a book, you know, reading the story books as a kid. And
yeah,
I guess that was my first, I mean, that'd be everybody's first understanding of what story is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. And similar to that, when I ask you, and don't respond to that, but when I ask people, you know, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when I say story? A lot of people would say what you said, Dave, and what you said, Renee. And in addition to that, people would say, when I listen to the word story, I think of adventure. I think of a hero. I think of a journey. I think of excitement, right? Similarly, when I say the word, okay, what do you get when I say the word politics? You know, people's eyebrows would go up. I can see Renee doing that right now, yeah? And people are like, okay, what are you talking about? And if I'm doing this for an organization, I'd say, okay, what if I was to ask you, what's the situation of office politics in your company? You know, people would start squirming in their seats. And I look at them and I say, did I say a bad word? The fact is, no. I just said politics or office politics, and politics by itself is not a negative term, right? We've studied political science. Politics is required for the effective running of an institution, organization, or even a country. But when I say politics, what people hear is hidden agendas. When I say politics, what people hear is corruption, and so on and so forth. Similarly, Dave, coming back to your question, network. Unfortunately, there is, for some people, there is this negative association with the word network. Because when I'm coaching people, when I coach leaders, very often on this aspect of reaching out and networking and connecting, and I hear statements like, you know, I don't want to be inauthentic. I'm like, whoa, hang on. I just said, why don't you network? I didn't even use the word inauthentic. What are you talking about? They said, yeah, that's what networking is about, isn't it? It's about showing up. It's about showing only the best side of you. And, you know, I said, no, that's not what networking is. Or for some people, the concept of networking is around, you know, just connecting for the sake of business or selling a product. But to me, and what really networking is the ability to reach out and form deep connections with a wide range of people so that you're part of different communities that you can learn from, that you can share with, that you can get from, that you can give back to. It's so much wider than just exchanging business cards at an event. So to me, networking is really much, much, much deeper than that.
You mentioned before that as a kid, you know, you're quite shy, didn't like approaching strangers and striking up a conversation with them. How did you build your own networking skills? How did you get from that shy boy to who you are today?
How much time do we have? Do we have like 7-8 hours? Because it's a long story. No, I'm just kidding. Talking about networking and reaching out, I always knew the importance of networking. And like I said, my dad played a huge role in that because my father was an officer with the Air Force and, you know, very social, very jovial. He could strike up a conversation with anybody, had lots of friends, would connect with a lot of people. And in fact, he was famously in our family known as the person who used his weakness of forgetting people's names as a strength to connect with people. Let me give you an example of how he used to do that. So, you know, there's this one story of his, which he's shared with so many people. I know it by heart now. My dad goes to this car mechanic, right? And he had an old beaten down car that he used to try and fix himself, right? So he takes this car to this mechanic. And before he goes there, he knows that it's going to run up a huge bill because there's some huge issues with the car. And he wants to be able to negotiate with this mechanic. And it's a new area. It's a new mechanic. So dad goes there and he looks at the mechanic and whatever that guy's name is. And he asks him, he said, hey, so where's Bill these days? And the mechanic would look at him and say, who are you talking about? You know, Bill, that guy, that really, you know, that bald guy who's really good with cars. And, you know, he gives me a coffee every time I come here. And, you know, he talks to me about his kids. You know, Bill, the mechanic would look and say, I have no idea who you're talking about. There's nobody called Bill who works here. I say, oh, what's your name? He says, I'm John. I said, okay. You know what? I'm getting confused. Maybe it's the other mechanic shop that I used to go to because I'm so stressed out about my car. I'm not thinking straight. I'm really stressed out. I'm hoping you'll be able to help me out with this trouble because I'm really stressed out about the amount of, you know, the bill that's going to be coming my way. And just like that, you know, there's a smile on John's face and says, don't worry. The experience you had with Bill, we'll try and recreate it here for you. Don't you worry about it. Tell me about your car. Now, this is just one of those many things that I've seen him do, right, that I used to see him do. So for me, I, you know, even the ability to be vulnerable and be able to ask for help, right, and say that I'm stressed out is something that I saw from my dad. And I guess that rubbed off on me, but I never knew how to do it. I never really knew how to do it, Renee. So to your question of how did I start doing it, I think there's quite a lot of things that happened at the same time. They say that your situation is the biggest driver to make changes happen in your life. And for me, that situation happened about 13, 14 years back, when I found myself joining a firm as a partner. And this was a learning solutions firm. I joined them as a partner. And for the first time, my role involved business development and sales. And I was like, all right, this is something I've never done before. And this is something that I don't enjoy doing. So what are we going to do about it, buddy? So anyways, I guess I just started reaching out to people because the situation needed me to do it. And I wasn't doing much beyond just reaching out to people. And that worked, that helped. My focus on networking really, really came in when I started my own business about 10 years back. And that's when everything changed for me, because it was no longer a good to have, it was a need to have. Now, this was 10 years back. Today, I believe networking is a need to have for everybody, whether you're an entrepreneur or not. 10 years back, the world was much different than it was just 8 years back. So yeah, did a couple of things on how did I kind of start doing this stuff? How did I start reaching out? I think number one, the first thing that comes to my mind is I had to battle a lot of my inner demons. You know, the same example I gave you around concept of networking, how people look at it. For me, it wasn't that. That was never the issue. For me, the issue was something else. For me, the issue was reaching out to people and feeling shy and awkward about it, especially when I was reaching out to known people, people that I'd known a while back. So I guess the first thing that I started doing is to just reach out to known people and reconnecting with them. Because if you ask somebody, you know, you've got two sets of people that you want to network with. On one side of the room, there's a bunch of people who you know or you've known. And on the other side of the room, there's a bunch of people that you've never met. Who would you feel more comfortable networking with? This set of people who you know, but you haven't met for 4 or 5 years, an absolutely new bunch. You'd be surprised. So let me ask you, which side would the two of you gravitate? Just a part of my own study. Dave, Rennie, where would you guys go?
I'd go the people that I've known before, okay. I think.
All right.
I would go the opposite.
To go the opposite. There you go.
I would barge in there, especially at a few drinks. So we have barge in there.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating. I speak to so many people about this example. There's some people who feel nervous about reconnecting with people they already know. And there's some people who feel nervous or unsure about reaching out to new people. And it's different things for different people. But for me, it was really about getting back and having a conversation. There's so many people who've not spoken to their friends for 10, 15 years. I'm not one of those people. At least for the last 10 years, I'm not one of those people. I now can sit down in the evening while I'm having my drink. I look at my phone and I see the number of a friend I haven't spoken to in 6 months, 8 months. I do not hesitate in just dialing that number. I do not. And say, hey, what's up, buddy? What's happening? And even if the person is a little confused or is not as welcoming, that's fine. And I guess that's the first thing that I did. And then there were a series of different things that I started doing. But most importantly, it was about getting out of that hesitation of reaching out. And what is it that others are going to think about it when I call them?
So you keep touching on your father, obviously greatly influenced by him. I know he was a senior officer in the Indian Air Force.
Yep.
I did listen to a little bit of your podcast. Or sorry, your TED Talk. And it was interesting because you tell a story about two different scenarios, two quite strikingly different scenarios of a very formal dinner and a sitting down mechanic. Do you feel like that adaptability to be able to build a connection to different types of people helps with being a good networker? Of being a good leader.
Yeah. And that's a great point, Dave. That's a beautiful point. And I'm so happy that you watched that talk. It's one of my favorite stories about my dad and about relationships in general. But I guess what it takes to be a good networker, more than adaptability and being able to connect with different people, is just a very clear sense of purpose about people. An authentic desire to want to connect. And I think that's what makes a good networker. A great networker, having an authentic desire to connect. Because if you don't, then you're really forcing yourself to do something that you don't want to. But here's an interesting twist in this, because sometimes when I'm coaching some people, and there's this conversation I was having with one of my clients, let's call him Sam, and Sam says that, Karthik, I'm an introvert, you know, I don't like reaching out to people and talking to people. I said, fair enough. Absolutely fine. But do you connect with some people? He said, sure, yeah. What kind? And he started talking. I said, why do you connect with them? Why do you reach out to them? What are you seeking? The point I'm making is that it's important to identify your why. What's your purpose? What's your purpose in wanting to connect with people? The purpose isn't always to get something. The purpose could be to give some. And if you watch that TED Talk of my dad, that's where his purpose used to come from. It wasn't about what can I get out of this relationship. It was just about, you know, I just want to serve. I just want to help. I just want to see how I can reach out. So I guess to be a good networker, an authentic leader, a good networker, it's really about having that deep desire to want to connect. And again, it's not about the numbers. It's not about connecting with, it's not about how many phone numbers you have in your phone book. It's about how many people are going to be there for you when you need them. How many people are you going to be there for when they need you? That's what matters.
What one piece of advice would you give a new leader?
You know, Helen Keller said it best when she said, alone, you can only go so far. Together is when you can really travel the distance. Don't quote me on it, because she said something like that. In fact, what she said was a lot more powerful than what I said. But the message is clear. My advice to leaders would be, reach out. You can't do it all alone. You just cannot do it alone. Reach out, speak up, connect, tell your stories, network.
But is there the building that connection, reaching out, right? It has to be authentic, right? It's that I've seen in organizations. It would be hard for me as a person to accept an invitation to connect with a leader who referred to me as a resource all the time, right? Just dehumanizing me to be some sort of printer or PC that sits, you know. So do you think it's to see a person rather than the worker or what they can do for you?
Yeah, no, I think authenticity is really, really crucial to networking and to storytelling, but it's really about what you want to achieve. I'll give you an example. I was coaching this leader, sales leader, sales and operations leader from this client organization. And we were talking about the brand that he wants to build for himself. So the first question I asked him, the process that I took him through, is I said, all right, can you list down some words that describe how you want to be seen in the eyes of others? List down some words that describe how you want to be seen in the eyes of others. And he said things like honest and jack of all trades and things like that. I said, okay, great. The second question I asked him is, all right, who needs to see this? Who needs to see you like this? And through a few questions, it became apparent that it wasn't a particular set of people. It was everybody in the world, because that's the brand that he wanted to build. I said, all right, now can you find your own authentic stories to help arrive at that? Because Dave, I know some people who do work around storytelling, and it's about, you know, let's create a story there. I do not subscribe to that philosophy, because to me, stories have got to be authentic. And the reason for that is, it's very simple. The objective of storytelling is to engage, connect, and relate with people so that you can inspire and influence. And that's the key word, inspire and influence. Now, because you're using storytelling as a tool to network so that you can inspire and influence, it's really important that your credibility, because it's your credibility at stake, it's your integrity at stake. Versus if the objective is not to inspire and influence, if the objective is to, let's say, entertain, which is what stand-up comedians do. The objective is to entertain. Make up your stories for all I care. Don't have to be authentic, because the objective is really to entertain. So I think it's really about being able to find your true authentic stories. And one of the rules I talk about in my workshop, rule number one out of the 10 rules, is that a story is a real specific incident. You've got to be able to cull out real specific incidents from your life and use that to relate with people, network with people using stories. Yeah.
I found that when I started running training courses 7-8 years ago, and training was not a skill set of mine when I first started. And I very quickly learned that one of the most effective ways to engage with the people in the room was to tell stories, to be able to relate what I was teaching them back to my own personal experiences, or asking them to share an experience that they could relate to the whatever we were talking about at the time. And it makes for a much more engaging training session, not just for them, but also for me. Because if I'm just teaching theory and I'm just talking to slides or whatever, it's pretty boring. But yeah, having that ability to tell those stories, to share my experiences, I found really worked well in a training environment.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Renee. And not just that, one of the things that I'm really convinced about, and I'm a huge, huge proponent of, and I talk about it in various forums, is the fact that the world has changed. We all know that. In the last 2 years, 3 years, the world has absolutely changed in every way we can imagine. And what that means is that the way we communicate, amongst other things, the way we communicate, the way we reach out, the way we connect needs to change. Now more than ever, more and more organizations, more and more people are talking about feeling lonely, feeling disconnected, feeling demotivated, feeling a lack of empathy. Where's that coming from? I'll tell you where that's coming from. That's coming from the fact that we've just become so transactional in the way we communicate. Every one of us. And that being transactional in the way we communicate never hit us pre-pandemic, because we were too busy chasing everything, doing everything, too busy with the noise, with the water cooler conversations. You take all of that away and like, oh my God, there's no one I can talk to. There's no connection. I jump into a Zoom call with a colleague and it's all right, did you send me that report? Okay, what's happening with this? What's happening with... We've just become so transactional. And storytelling, like Dave said a while back, really helps you humanize that conversation. And that, I think, is really, really crucial to the kind of world that we're living in today. So whether it's an entrepreneur wanting to sell his services, whether it's a leader wanting to connect with his team member, whether it's a team member who's joined a new organization, wanting to influence people, it's really about humanizing that conversation. I've got so many examples that I could share on how people have been able to actually do that and get real results. So you're absolutely right, Renee.
It's crazy. It's a little paradox, isn't it? We've never been more connected across the world. Right? I know what people are doing over in Ireland that, you know, I haven't seen for years and years. But yet there's a rise in loneliness, depression, just the genuine connection is just seems to be lost, right? And it's hard. I Renee and myself, we've done facilitation, we've obviously done training. The Zoom call, you miss up on a lot of stuff. Just the banter you'd have in the office, the noise, you know, that energy that you get when an office and a high-performing team can't be replicated across a Zoom call when you check in for some 50 minutes and when you turn off the call, then you're sat there for 7 or 8 hours staring at a blank screen, or even worse, trying to facilitate a conversation with a group of people and they haven't got their cameras on and you're just going, are they awake? Are they paying attention? You miss that kind of feedback from people. And if you don't get it, it's a struggle, right? I think it actually affects your mental state as well, because you're going, is there any value to what I'm doing here?
I've found the training courses that I've run online in the last 18 months, I liken them to the Dementors on Harry Potter. The Dementors are the dudes, those things that come and suck the life out of Harry. I feel like that when I run training courses, especially when the engagement, you know, there's no cameras on it, you know, it's really, it's so draining, so tiring running those courses when I'm like, my feedback's been, oh, we love your enthusiasm. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get myself through this training course. So yeah, it's so draining.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Renee. And that's something that we did feel initially when we started getting onto this virtual mode. And, you know, we've been challenged as well. And last year was just about figuring out how the hell do you work through this dynamic. But, you know, one of the things that I've learned, and more than learned, one of the things that has gotten reinforced for me through this process is there's a much greater need today than ever to create a space of psychological safety for people to listen and contribute. What do I mean by that? When we're face to face with people, the pre-pandemic time, everybody's got 10,000 things going on in their lives. Everybody's optimistic about a lot of things. You're talking about promotions. You're talking about sales results. You're talking about offsites. You're talking about this, that, and the other. That's not what's taking up people's mind space now. People's mind space is going to, all right, am I still going to have my job 6 months down the line? What's going to happen to my company? Am I always going to be sitting at home? Will I ever be wearing pants to go to work? Right? And stuff like that, right? What that means is that it's so important. And for me as a facilitator, as a coach, and not just for me, for all of us, we've realized the importance of creating that psychological safe environment in virtual setups. Again, there, the power of networking, because when I'm connecting with people even in a workshop, for me, that's networking. For me, that is again networking, because I'm there to serve and I'm there to form connections that are going to be there for me and I'm going to be there for them. What I've found is really the power of sharing is so powerful in building connections, the power of sharing. You know, if you ever wonder why it's called give and take, not take and give, you got to be the first one to give. And even in storytelling and in networking, can you be the first person to be vulnerable and share your story? And I've noticed very often when you do that, it does inspire, encourage others to start sharing their stories. So in the course that I run on networking and storytelling, this is one of the eight patterns, which is called bonfire stories. And what is bonfire stories? It's like a chain reaction. Think of the last time you were sitting around a bonfire with your mates and having a great time, right? Did you ever sit around a bonfire and tell ghost stories? You guys done that?
Yeah.
Renee is saying, not ghost stories.
No, that's my time to leave. Thank you. I don't do ghosts.
Yeah. So either ghost stories or stories from life or just fun stuff. I know it's such a beautiful experience because it's a chain reaction. Haven't you seen it? There's one person who jumps in first, shares something interesting and intense, pauses for a second. And before you know it, another person has jumped in and says, hey, I've got a story like that to share. Or, hey, I want to talk about something that happened to me like that. Or, you know what happened to me? I was passing through a graveyard one day. It just sets off a chain reaction. That's the power of sharing in networking. I tell people that the more you are willing to go out there and share, the more people you can impact, the more people you can create that safe environment for them to start sharing as well. It's really, really powerful.
I think that's a very good advice.
How do you know when you're oversharing? Because I have, you know, worked with a handful of people over the years who all they do is tell stories and they don't actually do anything else because they're always telling stories. So how do you know when you're telling too many stories?
Great question. Feedback and not getting lost by telling too much. What do I mean by that? Let me backtrack. I'm sure you've seen a pendulum, Renee, right? A pendulum swings from the left to the right. Now, if I was to ask you, what is the most balanced position of the pendulum? What would you say, Renee?
Neutral.
Neutral, which means pretty much in the center?
Mm-hmm.
Not moving to the left or the right, absolutely balanced, right? Now, each one of us as human beings, let's say in the context of sharing, because we're talking about sharing right now. Now, there's a perfect balance of sharing, which is right in the center, which is I'm not sharing too much, I'm not sharing too little. And that's your point, Renee. You're saying, how do I know if I'm sharing too much or too little? I want to be balanced. Now, first of all, this balance is a dangerous word because I believe it doesn't exist. We're always in the pursuit of balance. But anyways, that's for another podcast, another conversation. But so let's say balance, right? Now, when people ask me this question that how do I know that I'm not oversharing? And sometimes when I get asked this question from somebody who I know is today undersharing, here's what I explain to them. I say that, all right, look at one side of the pendulum as you oversharing, the other side of the pendulum as you undersharing. So this is where you're undersharing, this is where you're oversharing, and you want to find a balance. I say today, if you're here at one end of the spectrum, let's say you're undersharing, one end of the spectrum, and you're saying, Gatik, I want to come to the center. The question I'm going to ask you is, if the pendulum is here at one end of the spectrum, for it to come into the center, where must the pendulum swing? Where must it swing to?
Gotta go the opposite direction.
The exact opposite direction. The exact opposite extreme. So when people want to start doing that, they take small steps. And small steps is going to get them still here. And they're struggling to get the results. And they don't see the value of sharing. And they get disheartened and say it's not working. Or storytelling or networking. I say, you've got to push yourself. That's what pushing yourself outside your comfort zone is really about, because just changing a little bit is not outside your comfort zone. So how do you know if you're sharing too much? I'm saying, don't worry about sharing too much. If you know you're somebody who shares less, start sharing more till you start getting corrected, till you start getting feedback. And that's the other thing. I love feedback. Because feedback helps me get back on track. But some of us don't want that feedback. And we say, you know what? I'd rather figure it out myself. But that doesn't really happen. So yeah, share more. That's my simple answer there, or opinion, if not an answer.
As you know, our podcast is called The Leader's Playlist. So we ask each guest to name a song that they listen to trigger them, to get them in the mood, or to ground them for whatever topic we're talking about. So for you, for networking, how do you get yourself in the mood for networking? What song do you listen to?
For me, my go-to song is, actually there are two, but interestingly, they're both from the same soundtrack, from Rocky. And the first one is Eye of the Tiger, which really gets me up and going. So if I'm at an event and I find myself, sitting in a corner, not reaching out to people. All I need to do is plug in my earphones, listen to Eye of the Tiger, and just go get it done. And the second one is from the same movie. I don't know if you guys have heard it. There's No Easy Way Out.
Yeah.
I just love it. I just love that one. Yeah. And There's No Easy Way Out. Giving up would be a sin or something like that. That's how the lyrics go. And, you know, when I'm feeling down and out, or when I'm feeling like, you know, exhausted and I can't reach out to people, sometimes after a hard day's work, I'm still networking sometimes. There's no easy way out, buddy. Giving up would be a sin. You got to do it because it's your purpose. So those are the two songs that really get me moving.
Cool. All right. Renee, what's your song? What's your go-to networking song?
Oh, yeah.
So I was thinking about this. I'm never comfortable networking, whether it's during the day, speaking to people at work or at an event. But I usually listen to something with a little bit of excitement, a little bit of tempo. So I came up with I'm So Excited by Pointer Sisters. And, you know, as you always seems to be the norm for me, I have stories that go along with the songs that I come up with. I actually saw the Pointer Sisters live 2 years ago now, I guess it would be. And they're not the youngest band in the world, but oh my God, they were excellent. They were still, you know, kicking their leg up and everything, and they're, you know, 70 plus years old. They were excellent in concert. Dave, what's your song for networking?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a networking song. It's more a kind of get me into the zone. And I think it's more like when I listen to songs, so Irish songs, so from Christy Moore or something like that. I don't know, you probably won't know who that is, but he's famous. Our songwriter. And it just gets me into that zone of just, yeah, connecting with people. Because it's about, basically, Irish songs, our storytelling is a massive part of Irish culture. Right? They have a competition every year, I believe it's in Kerry. It's called Scale Tour. It's where the person actually scale a story in Irish, and they basically have the person tell the best story. More to entertainment rather than being authentic leader, but it just shows it's really part of our culture. So it's like that. I want to listen to that and just get into when you hear a story about, you know, the famine and all the stuff that happened in Ireland, and that's kind of things. It just gets you into that mood of going, I need to connect with someone, right? I don't know whether it's because I'm down and I need to cheer myself up or something like that, but it's like, yeah, there's a feeling of I got to connect with someone. And of course, being Irish, we have a massive worldwide presence. We're everywhere. So it's very hard to not bump into an Irish person, but I try and shy away from that a little bit. And that's another thing, I think, to go and meet someone new, experience a different culture or a different view of the world. Yeah, so that's it. I can't pick one song. It's just all those big storytellers from the Irish music industry.
Okay, fast five question time. Question number one. What is the book you're reading at the moment, Gaddick?
I'm reading two. I'll tell you the first one that I'm reading because the second one I'm yet to start. The first one is High Performance Habits. So yeah, that's the one I'm reading. I'm about halfway through and loving it. It's gotten me started to change my morning rituals a bit. And that's connected to the second book that I'm reading, which is the 5 a.m. Club. So yeah, those are the two.
Yeah. What is your favorite smell?
Yeah, it's a little different in Adelaide because it rains so much in winters. I don't get that much, but back home in India, the smell of the earth after the first rain, you know what I mean? The fragrance that you get of the mud after the first rain. Yeah, that really, that's yeah, I just love that. I just love that.
As a kid, what was your favorite toy?
If you can see behind me, all these action figures that I have, they have been a part of my life since I was a child. And the oldest one, and it's not the same one, of course, that one's broken, was an action figure of Batman. And I guess I just related to the two polarities of his personality so much. You know, it's just, and there's so much in the character. There's so much depth in the character. I just love that. So as a child, I used to love Batman. I still do. But a few other contenders that are coming very close now.
Yeah, Batman's one of my favorites as well. The only superhero without any superpowers, apart from being extremely rich.
That's what I love about him. That's what I love about him, you know? He's the only one who doesn't really have any superpowers except for being super wealthy.
With fancy gadgets like all wealthy people have. So
that's true.
What TV show are you binging at the moment?
Money Heist. I'm a little late in joining that bandwagon of people who've seen the entire thing. But yeah, that's the one. I think I'm on season 3 or something. Yeah.
Cool. So at the end of the world, what is the last thing you do?
I would just want to hug my family and just tell them how much they're loved. That's what I would do.
Nice.
Very nice. Thank you, Gaddick. It was very nice speaking to you. I love some of the stuff that you shared around networking and the stories, especially around your father and stuff. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks so much, Dave.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Had a good time. Thanks for your time, guys.